Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
One yes will change your life. And if you don't, if you change your story, you're going to change your life.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tarun Shum, and in this episode, we continue our conversation with Reid Goossens, a successful multifamily investment advisor and author living in the United States. After listening to his amazing life stories in this previous episode, we'll learn in this episode about his business strategies, personal habits, and inspirations. Previously, Goossens mentioned he relied on a mentor to get his foot on the investment ladder in America.
I knew I had to get a, you know, a coach, a mentor. You know, all good sports teams have one. I sort of had done a few little deals here and there, but hadn't really achieved that financial freedom that the Rich Dad Poor Dad book was talking about. You know, I was still an employee. I started to invest. And I was getting a little bit of cash flow, but it wasn't anything to write home about, but you know, it was a step in the right direction. So I really thought I needed to up my game, and you know, looking for that mentor, I wanted obviously someone who was actively investing. And there's a lot of people, as you know, in Australia, there's a lot of gurus, and there's even more of them here that claim that they're doing stuff but that are not actually doing anything. And I essentially stumbled across a mentor who was reasonably priced. He'd done a few big deals. He was also relatively newish, but had, you know, the right backing, the right mindset, the sort of, you know, similar age. So I sort of said, well, I'm gonna hitch my wagon to him. And through that, there was obviously a big education piece, about branding myself in a certain way, about developing pitch decks through the education piece and trying to educate investors about this world of syndication, which is what it's called here in the United States.
He explains what he means by syndication.
And that's essentially when you pool investors' money together and you get from point A to point B. So think of it like if you're going to go hire a Boeing 747, right, to get from Sydney to Perth, it's going to cost you as an individual a hell of a lot of money. However, if you can split that cost up with 100 other people and you are the captain or the co-pilot or up in first class, you know, you have, and everyone else is in the back, you know, in economy, everyone can enjoy the journey together, getting from point A to point B. And so syndication and you know, being a syndicator is you're essentially acting as the captain, if that makes sense, and you're steering the ship. So in general, there's a lot of investors out, as I said, explained before, that looking to place their money in high yield or relatively high yield, good returns over a, you know, medium to long-term prospect. So, and they're looking for capital preservation. So there's a whole bunch of things that I'm sure we'll get into about the different ins and outs of it.
Goossens compares American multifamily building investments and Australia strata title buildings, pointing out the vital differences.
Buying something with, in our case, it's, you know, we buy multifamily, which is, think of a garden style apartment, multifamily. You might be scratching your head thinking, what the hell is he talking about? In the United States, again, compared to Australia, where you have strata title, the options for financing in the United States are obviously a lot greater than they are in Australia. So there are banks willing to lend on the future value of a project or a set of a apartment complex, let's call it 100 units. And the banks are saying here in America, say, well, okay, when you build that, I'm going to be able to get, you know, you're going to be able to get net operating income of X, and I'm going to value it on the, whatever the market cap rate is. And we're going to lend you on the entirety of those 100 units. In Australia, the strata title, which is condominiums, is another word for condominiums. That's what I use here in the States. Obviously, local governments get taxes from strata, and the sum of the parts is more than the sum of the whole, combined with the fact that there's not enough lenders in Australia, that commercial lending, you know, in America, you can get fixed rate commercial terms for 10 years and amortized over 30. In Australia, you can't get anywhere near that.
Goosens facilitates these multifamily investments, which both maximize an investor's return and minimize their risks.
Back to, you know, reducing risk, understanding what type of loan you can get on the asset. Here in America, we can get non-recourse agency. When I say agency, it's backed by the government stocks and bonds, and the government needs to obviously get money working for it. So they put it into bonds, and those bonds forms loans in order to lend out and help investors like myself provide housing to the people of America, and they will offer it at very attractive rates. And it will also be called non-recourse, meaning if the deal goes south for none unknown reason of your own, you will not be held liable for it, because it's still a business at the end of the day. And if, you know, something happens, you know, people are always going to need a roof over their heads in a crisis, in a GFC type of crisis. Renters look for affordable housing, and apartments and multifamily are affordable housing. We look to buy 1980s, 1990s, early 2000 built assets. We don't look to buy brand new Class A buildings. We look for what's called Class B, and we look to go for that value add. So We want to see what the rents are, the in-place rents, and we want to go in there, you know, paint the units, put, you know, new appliances, put new flooring, put new light fixtures, and then increase the rent, you know, anywhere between $75 to $150, depending on the unit type. And so if there's a value add strategy there, combined with the fact that we have non-recourse debt, low leverage, it's fixed for X amount of years, 7, 10, 12, whatever you want, amortized over 30, and combined with the fact that it's the risk of people moving out. So if you, in that duplex scenario when I first bought back in the day, if one of my tenants moved out, I was 50% vacant. On a 100-unit building, the likelihood of 50 people moving out at once is extremely low. So hence why the bank will say, well, okay, well, that's a very low risk and we will make it non-recourse. So that's a bit of a lesson in financing 101 in America versus Australia, and the difference of multifamily and how they lend it, and in terms of risk and how we mitigate that.
He explains the role of his company in mitigating these investment deals.
The way in which we structure it is that like you're going to buy a house, you need a down payment, right? We would raise that down payment from our investors, and we would obviously chip in some money as well. But what we are bringing to the table is obviously the deal, because we found it. We're experts in the field. We're also bringing the loan to the table. So all our investors take no loan risk. And obviously I was talking about non-recourse before, but we still, as owners and operators, need to be underwritten by the bank. And so we need to have a net worth. We need to have a liquidity. And then we bring the loan to the table, as I said. So for international investors, it's very hard to get leverage in the United States, but because I live here, we bring that to the table. So typically, think of it like we're going to put 25% down, or about 30%, or 25 to 30% down, and then with the rest of the remaining 75%, we will bring from a bank. We're talking about that long, non-recourse, low risk, low leverage, fixed rate term, and then we may over-raise some money in terms of so we can do the CapEx and, you know, capital improvements to the property over the next period of time, and we may, you know, raise a little bit of an operating fund just to have some money on hand just in case, you know, anything happens. So that typically is the way in which we purchase the deal. The way in which is owned is that so if you think of a pie, like a circle, 70% of the deal is owned by our investors who bring limited partners, who bring the equity to buy the deal. And then 30% is left for me and my business partners. And that is what we take as pulling this deal together. There's some small fees on the front end, but that's essentially, we're doing all the hard work, and all our investors are passive investors. They're completely hands off. They don't lift a finger. They don't make any decisions. They are literally investing their money in a vehicle that will create them cash flow and that will, you know, we try to double their money in 5 to 7, 8 years time, depending on the deal and depending on the growth. So that in a nutshell is how we participate in these deals. So 70-30 split typically is how we do it.
He goes on further to explain how his shares work and how his business assesses their shares over the life of the investment.
If we create a proprietary limited company in Australia, so investors would buy shares into, we would set up a sole purpose entity and investors would buy shares into that entity. So if we're raising, if we're buying a $10 million deal and we're going to raise $3 million, then investors would buy shares into the deal and that $3 million would buy them an ownership of 70% of the deal, right? And then that remaining 30% is allocated to myself and my business partners. And we are the managers, and it's just the way in which we split the shares up. So there's Class A shares and there's Class B shares. And the Class A is for limited partners and the Class B is for us as the general partners. So that's how we access, in terms of our value in the deal. So when someone underwrites me, they say, okay, Reed owns X amount of money, X amount of percent in this deal, and this deal's worth $10 million.
And how these shares work in practice and incentivize his business to invest successfully.
But the cash flow from the property over the period of the hold, whether it's 5, 7, 6, 7, whatever it is, we typically do what's called a preferred return, which means the first we can't ever guarantee anything in real estate. And if you ever get approached by someone who says that, run the other way. But the next best thing is a preferred return. And it means that it's sort of like an IOU. So if we're projecting that the property may cash flow 8% a year, which, so if you're putting in, just call it $1 million, you're expected to get $80,000, $1 million into the deal, into a $10 million deal. The deal should pay you 8% on that $1 million, right? We may offer a preferred return of 6% to investors. So it's saying, well, the first 6% of cash flow, so the first $60,000 is going to investors. It's yours. We don't participate in it as the managers. And then anything over that, we split 70-30. So if for some reason the deal ends up getting 10%, cash on cash returns or 10% cash flow, we get to participate in that upside, if that makes sense. So we are incentivized to make sure the deal works, but there is what's called a preferred return. Now, on the flip side, if for whatever reason the deal is stuttering or is not going great the first year and we only get 4%, but we give you an IOU or a preferred return of 6, then that delta is tacked on to the previous year. And if there's any, the next year, if we don't hit it, blah, blah, it keeps getting tacked on until when we sell the asset, then there'll be a catch up of that preferred return to the investors. So it's really, we're very much aligned to make sure that the deal makes money for the investors and make sure we hit that preferred return. Otherwise, we don't participate.
The passive nature of multifamily investments means these investments work slightly different to others when it comes to equity and leverage.
This is all flow through ownership. So someone who invests $100,000 into a deal, with leverage and all that sort of stuff, their money's probably worth from day one, $120,000 or $130,000 with leverage. If you boiled it down, as an investor, they can't go and leverage against it. So they can go and use it as a net worth requirements, but they couldn't go and leverage against it because they are passive in the deal. And with lending requirements here in the United States, I'm sure like in Australia, if you were in a passive deal scenario, it would be very hard to use it as I want to put this as my quote unquote equity down on another deal or pull it out of the deal, because you could only pull that equity out if we chose to refinance or we chose to sell the deal.
Goosen stresses the importance of a good team and details his most recent big investment deal.
We just, we're about to close on a deal coming up here between now and literally just before the end of Christmas. And I'm actually going to be back in Australia when we're closing on it. That's the power of having a team around you. And we can spend a whole podcast about developing the right team. But we got this deal in Austin, Texas. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners probably have heard of Austin. Austin is definitely on the map. And it's more of a global city now. We got it off market because of my business partner. He lives in Austin. And we have built up a bit of a reputation through my podcast and through obviously his local networking. And it's going to be the largest deal we've raised to date. But it's going to be a cracker of a deal. And we're picking, it's 284 units. It was built in 2002. We're picking it up at a 5.5 cap, where the market in Austin is probably more like a 4.5 cap. So there's upside there. We're really looking forward to having it. It plants a flag in Austin, Texas. And I'm really, really excited to get this closed. But it's looking back, we've closed we bought about 1,000 units in the last 18 months. So there's been a big rapid expansion for us with Wildhorn Capital. But it's, you know, we're leaps and bounds and going on to do more and more.
Coming up after the break, we'll explore how Goosens brands himself to bring new investors on board.
It comes back to branding. When I first started in the United States, I started a podcast called, a couple of years ago, I started a podcast called Investing in the US.
The reasons he chose to follow this path.
It all comes down to financial freedom, right? I want to control my time.
How he conditions his mindset.
What I'm doing right now, talking to you, talking to other thought leaders. I was speaking at a conference over the weekend. I love getting amongst and being just chatting and talking shop.
All that and much more coming up next. I'm Tyrone Shum and you're listening to Property Investory. In order to get investors on board, Goosens has worked to brand himself in the US market.
It comes back to branding. When I first started in the United States, I started a podcast called, a couple of years ago, I started a podcast called Investing in the US. And originally it was about educating international investors about the benefits of investing here. Because when I first moved to the United States, I didn't know what an LLC was. I didn't know what credit was. I didn't know, you know, what the taxation systems was. But there was still attractive low barriers to entry for international investors like myself. So I said, well, hang on, through my mentor, you know, let's brand myself. I have this weird Australian accent and there's all these Americans talking to me. So why not I start a podcast about it? And, you know, I can be the number one in that space because I'm the only one in that space, right? And over time, I've niched and pivoted and I named it Investing in the US because it's over a period of time, I'm at 150 episodes or whatever it is. But you can only talk about real estate for so long. it's more, you know, now we talk about business startups and just investing in general in the US and not just for international investors, it's for everyone. But, you know, you had to really niche and lean into what I was, and that was Australian. I have a story. I moved halfway across the world for love, blah, blah, blah. That is, people like that. People think it's genuine. And that through that, I developed a bit of a brand. And over the past 3 or 4 years, it doesn't happen overnight, but over a period of time, you build credibility and trust. And now people come to me to look to invest, or me and my business partner. We can offer them a place to invest their capital.
While he originally intended to work with international investors, the reality isn't so.
The majority of my investors are American, right? The goal in the next 2 to 5 years is to attract more, bring actually more money from overseas markets and really double down on the brand. But the majority of my investors are international. As deals are getting harder and harder to pencil here in the United States because we are becoming a compressed market, American investors are expecting a bit of an unrealistic return rate, IRR, internal rate of return. But I know that investors in Australia or in Asia or in Israel or in Europe would jump all over it like white on rice. So definitely it is to continue the brand and all that good stuff in the near future.
As an Australian investing in America, it took some time to learn the terminology and strategies of real estate in the US.
One of the things I first learned when I moved to the United States is investing lingo, you know, understanding what the different lingo is and making sure I'm really, I got my head wrapped around it. Probably took a decent 2 years to really understand it and really have obviously honed in on it in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, since we've been doing the syndication, you know, you've got to understand, you know, different terminology. So like anything, if you put your mind to it and you read enough books and you listen to enough podcasts, you're going to learn it pretty quickly regardless of where you are in the world, and it's all self-education. But, you know, obviously having the mathematical brain of a civil engineer, structural engineer, helped a little bit. You know, I'm really good at spreadsheets. So, you know, that definitely does help, but for people listening out there, doesn't just because you're not mathematically inclined, you should try and educate yourself to be, but really understanding lingo, regardless of where you are in the world or you're investing, whether it be Australia or America, you know, you've got to really understand the local lingo, and you've got to build your team in and around you so you can be successful in whatever you do.
Goossens reinforces why he has chosen to follow this path.
It all comes down to financial freedom, right? I want to control my time. It's me and my business partner. We've got a team around us. We have third-party property managers who manage our deals. We have lawyers who help us close on the deals. We have general contractors who are third-party to us, but we are the puppeteers, and we control our time. I don't have a day job anymore. I wake up and I do what I want and do it because I love it. And that's really the true thing that I got involved in real estate for was way back in the day when I first picked up that Rich Dad Poor Dad book, was to invest for long-term wealth and have a paycheck, you know, have life, someone pay me to live my life. And obviously I'm a syndicator, I'm a quote-unquote fund manager, whatever you want to call me, but I control my time. And the most valuable asset in my life is my time. And so I can do whatever I want. I don't have to, you know, wake up and ask for time off or whatever. If I want to go away for a weekend or go away for an extended weekend or whatever, I do as I can. And really creating a life by design is all what I'm about, and it's really living life on my terms. So that's what I've been very, very focused on achieving and why I've gone so large so quickly. But in saying that, with the same breath, we're also being, my business partner and I, very cognitive of living a life by design. You know, he has kids. I don't have kids just yet, but he's making sure he's picking them up up after school every single day because he controls his time. That's really, really important to me.
And how he conditions his mindset every day.
I think doing these things, what I'm doing right now, talking to you, talking to other thought leaders. You know, I was at a, speaking at a conference over the weekend. I love getting amongst and being just chatting and talking shop. One of the biggest things I've found starting my podcast. I don't make any money off my podcast, but it opens doors. And you know, who doesn't like talking about themselves for 45 minutes, right? but the fact is, it's sort of like it's a door that's opened. And you know, Erica always says to me, my wife, she's like, geez, did you just take something? You know, because I'm always just I'm beaming when I get off a podcast because it makes the juices flow from within me. I love chatting to other people and diving into how they build their business and what makes them tick. And that just, I don't know, something about it's really, I'm a civil engineer. I was very black and white brain. And since creating my own podcast, I've really enjoyed it. And I think it's helped me keep really sharp. I release an episode a week, but I'm trying to just be around other thought leaders. And as they say, you're the average of the five people you surround yourself with. So I'm very much, you know, I love doing that sort of stuff, you know, and just checking in with people who really help me move the needle, if that makes sense.
Goossens advises his greatest book recommendations for anyone interested in property investment, business growth, and branding.
Obviously, Rich Dad Poor Dad, you know, let's talk about, you know, the two different spectrums. There's obviously Rich Dad Poor Dad for those people who are just getting started and trying to understand the world of investing and creating time for themselves and financial freedom. That's a really good book to start with. I also love the book, The 4-Hour Workweek, in terms of systems. Another book, and it's actually, you would may know of it, it's called Key Person of Influence. It's actually an Australian author. It talks a little bit about creating brands, and it's actually got nothing to do with investing, but it's got about positioning yourself as a key person of influence in your sphere and how that can attract investors or business partners or employees or whatever that might be. That's a really awesome book. Think and Grow Rich is another one.
And the best advice he's ever received.
I think it's got to go back to my dad, right? A fool and their money. A fool and their money are easily parted. I think that's got to be one of the number one piece of advice I've ever received.
Goossens attributes some personal habits that helped him in his success.
I'm a very active guy. If I don't run or work out or do something for two or three days on end, I tend to go a little stir crazy. So I've always been a very, very active person. I'm a morning guy. I know not all people listening to this show may be morning people. It is currently 10 past nine here on a Wednesday evening. So it's not morning anymore, but in the morning I will be going to the gym. But one thing that's definitely helped me in the last little while is, and it goes a little bit more back to, you know, this new world we live in, being an entrepreneur is a new black, you know, trying to always go and achieve things is meditation. Allowing yourself to have the calmness in the mind to not to say, okay, I can put it down now. I don't need to look at it 24/7. I don't need to be on my phone. I don't need to be on social media all the time. Trying to just break that up a little bit, and meditation has allowed me to do that. I'm not an expert at it whatsoever, but it has just allowed me that mental calmness. The other thing I do is journaling. Getting out of my mind and onto a piece of paper is really important for me to help me start my day or my week, whatever it might be. And also being, you know, having a lot of gratitude. I'm not a hugely religious person, but I do think gratitude is really important, and because you only live your life once. So make the most of it while you've got it. And if you're not appreciating the goals that you are kicking, and even as small as they might be, you need to nod the hat to it. Otherwise, you're just never going to be able to, you know, get ahead, because you always think you got to get to the next thing. So there are a couple of little things I do.
If Reid Goossens met himself 10 years ago, he'd have this to say.
The big thing I would say to him is just enjoy it. You know, like, you're going to go on a pretty awesome freaking journey. Enjoy it. You know, I don't think there's any one piece of advice. I honestly look back and there's not anything that I regret. And I'm really proud, being sitting here at 32 years of age, I'm really proud of that. And I want the next 32 years of my life to be exactly the same. So I'm going to do whatever it takes to be successful in not just business, but, you know, mental success, physical success, love, and gratitude. I think, you know, to be truly successful across all aspects of life means that you have to be. You can't just be successful in one.
Additionally, he has a unique perspective about how he sees the future.
Something that I've changed my thought process on so much in the last little while, and it goes back to being present. The old adage of, oh, what are you going to do when you grow up? What are you going to do? It's all constantly a race. It's, you know, race through university, or race through school, race through university, race through life, blah, blah, blah. Then we're going to retire at some point in the future. You know, I'm just going to work as hard as I can in the next couple of years and see what doors open. Because I tell you what, me sitting here today talking to you on an Australian podcast and saying that I've done all this stuff, 5 years ago, I would not have even thought, or it's even 6 years, 10 years ago, I wouldn't even thought I'd be doing that. So I've sort of changed my mind. I'm really obviously focused on the business and trying to create a really awesome portfolio for my investors. But in terms of just, I'm also going to take that goal or that target and the time pressure off the table and just say, look, I'm going to just enjoy the journey as well, because if I don't, then what the hell are we doing? You know, so a little bit philosophical, but and cheesy, but it's I think you have to, because, like, you know, there's a quote, and I can't remember the exact quote, but it talks about a song, right? You don't listen to the end of the song. The best part is of the song is the whole thing, right? It's the ups and downs, the choruses, and that's how you got to view life. You know, we're all on this journey together, and if you don't stop and enjoy the view every now and then, what's the point of doing it?
He can admit he got lucky in that both hard work and luck played a key role in his success.
If you look back, like, yes, I worked bloody hard to get a job, but it had to take that one person to say yes in order to give me that luck to then give me a job, to then help me on this journey to where I am now. It takes that one person to say yes to invest in you. It takes that one person to say yes to get that day job back working in the south of France. So there is a little bit of luck. You obviously got to put your neck out there, but it does take one yes will change your life. And if you don't, if you change your story, you're going to change your life. And that's, you know, Tony Robbins says that, and I'm a huge fan of his, but that's I think it's a mixture of both, but obviously not being afraid to back yourself and just say, well, look, if the worst case scenario is when I first moved away from Australia is that I had to move back, because I definitely thought about that. I thought, shit, if I don't get a job, I'm going to have to move back to Australia. But that's not the worst case, right? I move back to Australia, move back to my family, and I get another civil engineering job. And if that's the worst thing that happens to me, then I'm living pretty good. So that's how I've always approached life, and going and giving it a crack and backing yourself and backing your decisions. I think that's the number one piece of advice I can give to people listening to this and looking back at it, whether it's luck or hard work. I don't know if it falls in either bucket, but it's in the ability to back yourself. And I think that's really important.
If you want to find out more about his investments or contact Goossens, here's how.
You can head over to my website, which is just reedgoossens.com, R-E-E-D-G-O-O-S-S-E-N-S, and you can check out all the stuff on there. You can hit me up, contact me. It's pretty easy to find. So yeah, that's probably the easiest way of getting in touch.
Or search up his podcast.
called Investing in the US. It's on iTunes. You can search my name and just Investing in the US. It's pretty straightforward. Or An Aussie's Guide to US Real Estate, either or. They're all pretty searchable. And look, if anyone's ever coming through LA, LA is pretty much the first stop in America coming from Australia, and they want to catch up for a beer or coffee, I'm always down to meet other Aussies who travel in the world, or just, you know, moving to the States to make it happen.
Thank you so much to Reid Goossens, our guest on this episode of Property Investory. If you want to hear more about his journey, then visit our website at propertyinvestory.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.